It was a busy week in election news. Our campaign beat analysts recap both the Senate and House debates. They'll also discuss the controversial political mailer sent to thousands of Montana voters. That's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition. I'm Christopher Allen. Also, hundreds of farmers are meeting this week in Great Falls. Edward O'Brien speaks with a leader in the farming community about the modern challenges in Montana agriculture. Hundreds of Montana farmers are in Great Falls discussing issues that affect not only their bottom line, but our food supply. The 99-year-old Montana Farmers Union is holding its annual meeting and convention that lasts through tomorrow. Farmers face challenges that go far beyond crop yields and market prices. MFU's project specialist and chief lobbyist, Chris Christians, talks with Edward O'Brien about issues that may seem to have little to do with agriculture at first. Christians starts the discussion with proposals to transfer management of federal lands to state control.
We're concerned about that and the simple fact as to where the money comes from, what that would mean for the state of Montana, and particularly of grazing rights for our producers who currently are paying about $1.35 per animal unit for grazing on forest land and BLM properties. When I look at what I am personally paying for my animals, I am paying $26 per animal unit. That is a huge jump, and perhaps that may be what some people are thinking about doing, but that would have a very difficult impact immediately on farmers and ranchers as to that increase in those grazing rights. We have over 18,000 grazing rights for public lands in Montana right now, and that includes a lot of farmers, ranchers who are raising Montana beef.
Yeah. Mr. Christians, I know the Montana Farmers Union has long been a vocal advocate for country of origin labeling. Before we get into some of the most recent developments, let's just start at the baseline. How come?
Well, Montana Farmers Union has long believed, and our members all believe, that what we produce here is laudable, it is nutritious, it is close to the land, and people are raising a fine product. Fruits and vegetables have been labeled for some time. It is the area of meat labeling that seems to be dealing the greatest problem right now. For the third time, the WTO has just recently come down saying that we cannot be labeling the meat. We think this is a travesty. Whether or not this latest setback will be appealed remains to be seen. I have read about five different articles in the last 3 days regarding it, and no one is really saying exactly what the problem is other than the simple fact that our Canadian neighbors and our Mexican neighbors plan to add some very expensive tariffs and also affecting other products such as ketchup as an example, that should this rule go forward with USDA.
Well, Canada's ag minister describes COOL as an American protectionist policy that creates economic harm on both sides of the border.
They say that, and of course you would have some packers and shippers who would say some of the same thing, but they're not listening to the person who's actually raising the beef on the ground and our pork and poultry. They are the people who want to make sure they're not undercut with the imports of foreign meat. We as producers think that's proper.
Let's switch gears here, talk a little bit about Montana's rail lines, obviously so critical for ranchers and farmers. What sort of an impact is the oil, coal, and gas boom out east having on available cars and rail space?
Well, it has had a significant impact this entire year. Starting back in April, there was a problem in getting fertilizer shipped into the state of Montana, and it was only after the Surface Transportation Board stepped in and ordered Burlington Northern provide cars bringing fertilizer to the state. After the order took place, fertilizer did start coming in. During the entire spring, summer, we, along with others, were very concerned about all of the 2013 grain that remained in storage across the state. We met with members of the STB at Malta, Montana, talking about what the problems were, the fact that even the shuttles were having difficulty getting 110 cars for grain, and those smaller elevators in northeastern Montana were especially impacted because those are elevators that handle maybe 48 to 52 cars of grain at a time. They were unable to even get those cars, and when and if they did, they would fill the cars and then they would sit for another 2 to 3 weeks before they were moved. This year, you're going to find crop piled outside in many of our different communities.
Does MFU have a position on Keystone? Because I know pipeline advocates say more pipelines would alleviate this very problem.
We have members who are on all sides of this issue. It will be debated right now. Our current policy does not cover that issue. One of the things Keystone Pipeline might help is the discarding of waste that some areas is radioactive down in the Glendive, Montana area, because it's being hauled from the Bakken and dumped into reservoirs or holding ponds down in that particular area. And there's some real concerns about hauling it not covered from North Dakota into Montana.
One last question, because I know you do have to get yourself out to Great Falls, and that would be the 2014 Farm Bill, if I remember. It was signed all the way back in February. So far, what do you think?
It has been very, very confusing as to what farmers need to do. You talk about Olympic averages where you take 5 years of your crops, you throw out the high and the low, and then you kind of determine what the price of your grain is going to be, and right now that's up and down. It's really crazy. Spring wheat is under $6 a bushel, and if you have some protein over 12%, it's over $6. Right now the price of grain is not equal to the input cost. People are having to make decisions this fall as to what's going to lock them in for the next 5 years. Just because one farmer picks one program, it may definitely not be the right one for the next. And so people need to look at their individual productions, their own circumstances, and make the best decisions.
What's that old curse? May you live in interesting times. Boy, it sounds like Montana farmers, American farmers are living in very interesting times right now.
Oh, sometimes I think that you could take the same money from your operating loan and go to a casino, and you might come out just as well as putting the seed in the ground, watching every cloud that goes over all summer, hoping for rain, hoping that you don't get hail, and then an early frost and snow and all the rain in early September. You know, it's a gamble, and it's a major gamble. You have to appreciate what our farmers and ranchers go through on a daily basis in their operations.
It's a business meant for tougher people than I. Chris Christians of the Montana Farmers Union, thank you so much, and have a great time and a productive time this weekend as well.
Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Welcome to Campaign Beat, our weekly political analysis program featuring Lee Newspaper Capital reporters Chuck Johnson and Mike Dennison, and hosted by Montana Public Radio's senior news analyst, Sally Mock.
Well, Mike, the two U.S. Senate candidates, Democrat Amanda Curtis and Republican Steve Daines, held two debates this past week in Billings and in Sydney. And, of course, par for the course, both campaigns claimed victory. But was there a clear winner, do you think, in either or both of those debates?
Well, the first one, I think, is the one that really mattered, the one in Billings that was on TV across the state, and voters who cared to watch it could watch it. And that one, I think it was kind of a bit of a draw, really. I think that Curtis, she was successful in that, you know, she showed voters that, you know, she's a very articulate candidate who knew the issues, and I thought she did a lot better than people thought she might do, being such a rookie at this, running statewide, not many people knowing her. So they got a good look at her, could see she's articulate. Daines, on the other hand, I think he looked a little nervous. He seemed nervous, but he did a very good job of, you know, of sticking to his speaking points, which I'm sure all candidates are trained to do, and answering the questions, you know, fairly well. Curtis, of course, her style was to go after Daines and paint him as an extremist, as an extreme conservative right-wing congressman who doesn't represent the mainstream in Montana. And whether that's successful or not, you know, that's the Democrat strategy. And Daines, you know, in person and when he speaks, you know, he really doesn't sound like an extremist. I mean, he's a very, you know, garden variety, conservative, pro-business Republican. I think that's the way he comes across. I think that that's the way he is on most issues.
And it's interesting, Mike, that he didn't really respond directly to her as a candidate. He directed many of his comments towards the current Democratic administration, towards the policies of President Obama. That seems to be his focus rather than going after Amanda Curtis.
That's clearly the strategy of the whole Republican Party in Montana and probably nationwide, to nationalize the races, because Obama he's not popular. Let's face it, he has very low approval ratings in Montana. So they're going to tie Democrats to him whenever they can, even if it's a local race like the legislative race. In the Sydney debate, Daines did a lot more of that. And he kind of went after her on a couple of things in the Sydney debate. He was a little more aggressive, criticizing her for voting to uphold a veto of Governor Bullock of $35 million in funding for infrastructure out in oil tax country in eastern Montana. And a couple other things. He said that she was, you know, a supporter of radical environmentalists, as he put it. So a little more aggressive on his part in that second debate up in Sydney, where he certainly had a very receptive audience.
And as you said, Mike, considering that Curtis was teaching high school math a scant 2 months ago, she held her own pretty impressively in both those debates.
I think she held her own much better in the Billings debate. In the Sydney debate, she wasn't as good. There's, I'd say, several questions where she didn't really answer the questions. She just kind of got out some sort of a talking point. But that was a debate where the questions were much more geared toward things that Daines was comfortable with, I think. Given his stance on, you know, natural resource development and agriculture and things that are important to the rural part of the state, which is certainly what Sydney is.
Mm-hmm. Chuck, both the House candidates, Democrat John Lewis, Republican Ryan Zinke, and the third candidate, Libertarian Mike Fellows, also debated this week. And the underdog, John Lewis, it seems to me, is getting more bite and being ever more aggressive as he tries to gain ground on the front runner, Mr. Zinke.
Yes, I think that's definitely the case, Sally. And that's really no surprise. The polls we've seen, Lewis is trailing by, within single digits. And so he has to do that. He has to convince voters that, you know, they should vote for him instead of Mr. Zinke. And the Great Falls debate was probably the more interesting of the two. The other one was in Kalispell on Sunday night. One of the questioners, a reporter from the Great Falls Tribune, John Adams, asked Zinke about his missing military records and when were we going to get to see those. Especially was interested, as are all media in Montana, in what's called a fitness report, kind of an annual personnel evaluation dated June 15th, 1999. And some of Zinke's critics in the military are saying that's going to be a bad report for Zinke because it has to do with allegations that he misused government money by flying to Montana to scout out places for SEALs to train here. Zinke has said throughout the campaign that he did make a mistake. He submitted a receipt for a one-way plane ticket to Whitefish, ostensibly to look for SEAL training property, and the Navy disallowed the expense, and he paid back the $211 bill, and that was that. His critics in the military saying there's much more to it than that, and it'll all show up in this report in June of 99. Zinke released some records to us, but only released four of the fitness reports over his 23-year period, and they're more than annual reports in some cases. That was not one of the reports he released. Now, he submitted a request to the Navy on September 1st to get all of his records and intends to release them when he gets them. He's expected to receive them sometime in the middle of next week. So presumably that will settle the issue if we see that report from June of 99.
Mr. Zinke points out that since 1999, he received several prestigious appointments in the military that certainly reflected the military having high regard for his service.
That's definitely the case. And so I really don't know who to believe. His prime critic is a guy named Larry Bailey, a retired Navy captain in the SEALs who was in charge of training Zinke when he initially underwent the first set of training drills down in California when he became a SEAL. So there's definitely some bad blood there, and we'll see who's right when the reports come out, hopefully next week.
And, Mike, in the U.S. Supreme Court race between incumbent Mike Wheat and his challenger Lawrence Van Dyke, there's a new ad out that is by the Montana chapter of Americans for Prosperity. And let's listen to that ad and then talk about that.
Montana deserves a fair and impartial Supreme Court. But Justice Mike Wheat, he has a history of supporting extreme partisan measures. Wheat supported a statewide sales tax that would have cost Montana families over $450 million each year. And he supported raising fees on hunting and fishing licenses and on our car registrations. Wheat even voted no on clean-burning natural gas, jeopardizing Montana jobs. Call Mike Wheat and tell him to keep his extreme politics out of the Montana Supreme Court.
And, Mike, this is a nonpartisan race, but the ads attacking Mr. Wheat and the ads supporting him go along party lines.
Yeah, pretty much. That ad we just heard is just one little piece of what we've been seeing. America's Prosperity just kind of started out this week. We've had at least $750,000 spent by outside groups in this race. It's probably going to surpass $1 million. Three out of the four groups that I know of are against Wheat. These are conservative groups who are tarring him as a quote-unquote liberal, extremist, et cetera. The other side, there's one group, it's primarily the trial attorneys of Montana, who have raised and spent about $300,000 on his behalf and are attacking Van Dyke, his opponent. And what we're having, people are trying to control the court, and we have a court that's pretty closely split, but if you defeat Wheat with a conservative, the conservatives are going to almost control the court on some key decisions in the future. So that's what's going on here. And, you know, the ad you just heard, there's a lot of things in that ad I think are really inaccurate. But be it as it may, you know, the message is clear. It's just a matter of, you know, are voters going to believe what they hear? Because in judicial races, you know, there's not a lot of information out there. People don't know these candidates very much. They don't know what they stand for. Judges really can't run and say, I'm going to do this or that. So there's a huge vacuum of information that these groups are more than happy to try to fill and influence the vote.
And speaking of influence, there's also a mailer that a lot of Montana voters got recently that has the Great Seal of Montana on it. And this mailer supposedly shows the political leanings of four Supreme Court candidates. And it's put out supposedly by researchers at Stanford and Dartmouth. What is that all about?
It arrived in people's mailboxes this week. It looks very official. It says 2014 Montana General Election Voter Information Guide. There's the seal of Montana, which cannot be used for this kind of thing without permission of the Secretary of State, who yesterday denounced it as unethical and probably illegal to use it. If you look on the backside, it's got this line with dots showing where Jim Rice and David Herbert are compared to Mitt Romney and Barack Obama. But the more important race, at least the one drawing the most attention, is the other race between Mike Wheat and Lawrence Van Dyke. And it shows Wheat not far from Barack Obama on this scale, and Van Dyke more conservative than Romney. And it's put out as part of a Stanford-Dartmouth research project to try to see if this will influence elections. Well, it's clearly got people outraged in Montana, and Stanford University today apologized for it, but the damage is kind of done. 100,000 of these went out. As Mike said, nobody really knows much about the Supreme Court race or the candidates, and, you know, this could make a difference in the race, and there's really nothing the state can do to stop it now that it's out here.
And it does seem like there is something fishy going on here that goes beyond a research project, but we should point out we don't know what that is yet.
No, it's hard to know. I mean, you know, if this truly is a research project, you know, these guys ought to be ashamed of themselves for just messing with Montana's election as some sort of plaything. And, you know, if it isn't a research project, I'd like to know who's behind it. But like I said, if it is, I mean, Chuck's right. This is just outrageous that these guys would just insert themselves into the election with just this mailer that no one really knows who it's from or what it's about. And it could have an effect on the outcome of the race for the Supreme Court and the control of the Supreme Court, who who controls it in terms of liberal or conservative or whatever, however you want to describe it.
In big letters at the bottom of it, it says, "Take this to the polls!" exclamation point. So it's clearly an attempt to influence the election, I think.
Well, more to be found out there, I'm sure, and we'll keep following that. Meanwhile, the days are getting shorter, as is the campaign season, and one of those things is a good thing. We will talk again next week, guys. Thanks, Chuck. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Sally.
You've been listening to Campaign Beat, our weekly political analysis program featuring Lee Newspaper's Capital reporters Chuck Johnson and Mike Dennison, and hosted by Montana Public Radio senior news analyst Sally Mock. We hope you'll join us next week. And don't forget, Campaign Beat is available to listen to and share on our webpage at mtpr.org.
And now for your weekend weather forecast. West of the Divide tonight, mostly cloudy with a chance of rain showers, lows in the 30s. Saturday, partly cloudy, highs in the 60s to lower 70s. Sunday, mostly cloudy with a chance of rain throughout the day, highs in the 40s. And central Montana tonight, mostly cloudy with scattered rain showers, lows 35 to 40 degrees. Saturday, partly cloudy, highs 55 to 65. And Sunday, mostly cloudy, chance of rain and snow showers, highs 45 to 55 with wind gusts up to 55 miles per hour. And in southwest Montana tonight, mostly clear with some isolated rain showers, lows 35 to 40 degrees. Saturday, sunny, highs 60 to 70 degrees with wind gusts up to 35 miles per hour in the afternoon. And Sunday, mostly cloudy and a lot cooler, chance of rain and snow showers, highs 40 to 50 degrees. And that's our newscast for this evening. If you have a comment, don't hesitate to post it on our website at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Christopher Allen. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great weekend.